Michael, how are you, pal?
Good, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Good, good. Great to hear your voice. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk with you about. Your work is incredibly impressive,
Well,
and
thank you so much.
I'll tell you several reasons I like about it. We want to maybe get caught up a little bit for people that don't know about your work and what it is. But I will say, just to get it started, that it is or has become over the years, perhaps at first implicitly integral or transpersonal, and then increasingly explicitly integral. And it's really impressive. The one reason I'll say right now, there are more as we go, it's really impressive because it's so hard to find signifiers and reference for things that are from higher states or stages of development. And I think you've taken some ordinary images, if you will, and made them iconic of these higher and deeper. That's damn hard to do.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have somebody acknowledge that. That's pretty cool. Mostly I put it out there and people go, okay.
Oh. And one of the things I want to talk about is how very hard it is to have either a painted image or a chunk of lead or a sculpture of clay or that kind of stuff to actually have that be a signifier that is going to have in the viewer's mind a signified come to mind, and that signified somehow represents or presents or evokes a referent that's not merely in the artwork itself. So that's what's fascinating, because what are you trying to bring forth? And it's not just something that's obvious, it is something that's deeper or higher or wider in many cases. And that becomes the trick. How can you, for example, signify anything, let's say like a realm of non-duality, if you're given a handful of clay and some paint?
Right.
And
It's
that
already form. It's already matter. It's already
exactly, yeah.
existing in the dualistic realm.
And, you know, I think that's the real challenge of art, I think, particularly given the fact that we're in a post-postmodern age. And so we can't do it the way the old masters did, where you would just paint. The basic cultural background was a mythic stage of development, roughly.
Right.
And so you could use mythic themes. I mean,
Right.
Thor and Zeus and lightning bolts and apples and trees and Eves and snakes, that's not too hard to figure out.
Yeah.
But when you get to an era that's no longer mythic, it's certainly post-mythic, and it's no longer rational. It's post-rational, but it's also post-deconstructive. Deconstructive was easy because you could just go through, take anything that you wanted to, put a big X through it, and you got your painting.
Yeah, right.
You know, okay, done. Figured it out. There you go. Well, they X'd everything out of existence, and now what are you going to do? And that's where your work steps in. And that's why, in addition to whatever conventional critics have seen in it, which is obviously something and valued, I see something in it that I think is really quite astonishing, and that's why I would really like to recommend it to those who have an integral eye and want to see really exquisite examples of using ordinary imagery and objects and patterns to evoke non-ordinary images and patterns and states. And we want to go through and talk a little bit about some of those, because that's what's so fascinating. And increasingly, you must be facing that. And it's pretty clear from some of the stuff you've written that you are facing it, but I'm just sort of bringing it up as a rhetorical question. You must, on occasion, sit down and say, okay, now how do I convey non-duality with a bunch of dualistic forms in my hands? And that's sort of the challenge, certainly one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think one really key thing that you brought out in some of your writings is the fact that an integral approach doesn't have to have the whole kitchen sink thrown at it.
Exactly.
You don't have to throw a little bit of Renaissance, a little bit
Right.
of, you know, Cubism, a little bit of this,
Right.
and that's that in fact it's much more being in the consciousness that would be
Right.
all inclusive.
Right.
And I think so much of what happens is, in some ways, it's a conscious intentionality to try to achieve something, but at the same time, there is almost a parallel unconscious development that's tracking it.
Right.
And that many times something is unfolding and you don't even realize it until you start communicating with it, and then it's, you know, the connection starts happening. I don't know. I mean, you've described it in your writing where maybe you're thinking about something for months and then suddenly you sit down and in 3 weeks you finish a book.
Right.
You know, and it isn't so much that you've had to think of every single point through and
right.
connect it. It is that you had an intentionality and that you were sort of attracted to certain things that fit into that pattern, and then that pattern started to reveal itself as you started doing the work.
Yeah.
It just sort of unfolds.
I think so. And the trick is, for my own kind of an integral theory anyway, to think on the theoretical aspects of this, I've often said that integral art is basically any artwork produced by an integral consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it becomes impossible to define. Because then you have to say, well, integral art, it almost becomes like this totalistic Wagnerian assault. You know, it's every conceivable object, the kitchen sink, as you were saying, everything thrown in. That's kind of a totalistic work, which may or may not be integral. I mean,
yeah.
you can do an integral, comprehensive kind of work. You can certainly attempt to do, let's say, if you consider philosophical writing, the art of writing as an art, then you can do a soma, a kind of an overview, a summation of integral theory, and that might be in five volumes, and that could be a great piece of integral art. It could also be a completely shitty piece of integral art.
Hmm.
You can also do a single bamboo stalk.
Yeah.
And what, yeah, it's the intent, the consciousness, it's the being in a, either in terms of structures, a third tier structure, or a subtle causal or non-dual state of consciousness, and convey that structure or state in a way that it evokes a similar structure and state in those who are sensitive enough to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes an integral art, and then it can be judged on many other ways. It can be judged on whether the technique is well executed. It can be judged on whether it succeeds in terms of form or the grammar of it or in terms of the semantic of it and so on. But fundamentally, we're talking about, particularly with either transcendental art or transpersonal art, or integral art, we're talking about states and stages of consciousness that are post-conventional.
Mm-hmm.
And how to convey those with signifiers. Those are the referent, in other words, come from those worlds, those realms, those altitudes. And then that becomes the referent that exists in those worlds. A quick example is the square root of a negative 1 exists in an orange world space. It exists in a rational world space.
Mm-hmm.
If you are at orange or higher, you learn mathematics, you'll be able to see what the signifier square root of a negative 1 means. You'll have the signified for that. And then there are other things, obviously, in the art world. You're trying to convey the notion of non-duality or the notion of a reconciliation of opposites or the coincidentia oppositorum or something like that. And then how do you do that? Using, you know, a guy sitting on a horse and one white guy facing this way, dark black guy facing this way, back-to-back fused. That's
yeah.
a very striking image,
yeah.
referring to one of your works. So that really depends in terms of the actual intentionality getting imprinted into the artwork, if you will. And that becomes a crucial, crucial component. Let me say one last thing really quickly. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar. And this has to do with Zen art. And that is judged by how well the artist, first of all, has to be in a big mind state, has to be in non-dual state of consciousness, and then can do, let's say, calligraphy strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And calligraphy, of course, in Japan is an art form.
Yes.
And Haikuan, the great modern Zen master, he was in the 1700s, really sort of revolutionized Zen and left behind him 83 fully transmitted masters, which was just unheard of. But he's also held to be one of the truly great, great calligraphy artists. And it's said that you can tell just by looking at the calligraphy of a person how enlightened they are.
Huh.
And this comes from just subtle cues that can be picked up in terms of maybe the steadiness of the stroke, the sincerity of the stroke. Does it hesitate
okay.
here? Is it really, you have to become one with the paper, one with the ink, and then there'll be no hesitation. And that authenticity will come through in the sureness of the stroke. For those who, for example, can sip a great wine and tell you exactly the year that it was.
That begs the question for me then, is that an experience for only the initiated?
Well, yes and no. That degree of refinement, I don't think either one of us would have any trouble saying you can refine
mm-hmm.
artistic taste.
Mm-hmm.
But my belief, of course, is that structures of consciousness are not open to everybody. In other words, if you're at turquoise and somebody else is merely at orange, and you're painting primarily turquoise atmospheres, somebody at orange is not going to be able to see that.
Yeah.
Now, they'll see something. They'll pick up whatever it is up to orange, and they'll interpret turquoise down at orange, but they won't be able to see it, not cleanly, the way the artist does.
Yeah.
However, states of consciousness are pretty much, most of them, are ever-present and are available. So somebody at orange can indeed have a subtle and a causal and a non-dual state experience. And I think great art does that. I think a lot of art can help give a person a subtle or a causal or a non-dual taste. And it, just the art is so extraordinarily great and comes from some of those states that it can evoke those states in almost anybody at any stage. But integral art, presumably then, is something that is evoking, on occasion, higher states, and on occasion, higher structures.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, that's only for a certain initiated, but it can evoke a taste, a glimmer, and I think that's exactly what it does. States, I think, quite strongly. Structures, a hint that there's something that they can't quite put their finger on,
mm-hmm.
that they would somehow, they find it appealing, attractive, in ways they can't state. I think that's part of the value of it.
Yeah, this is something I'm grappling with a great deal because in many respects I feel like the work has never been more in tune with all those aspects that you're describing.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time I'm finding it more and more difficult to get people to understand the intentionality behind the work.
Well, I think it's because it's coming from higher structures and I'm not sure they're going to. Look, 0.5% of the population, the last set of believable data that we have, 0.5% of the population is at turquoise.
Yeah.
So that's just a rough rule of thumb right there. If you're painting something from turquoise, about turquoise, the turquoise referent, 0.5% of the population is going to be able to articulate what they're seeing.
Yeah, this isn't a bestseller.
It's not. Well, and that's, you know, that's not, you yourself said that, you know, not too many people would say what I said about your work when we started talking. It's not
right.
necessarily a common perception. But I think
right.
people that are at that altitude, very high chance that that will be evoked and appreciated. And I think that's really unavoidable in certain ways.
But then the other question I have here, then, how much of this do you think the intentionality should be state and stage in terms of the work, if it evokes a stage or a state? What gives it a more concrete depth?
Right. Right. And I think it can vary, but I think there's clearly a place for art that is experimenting with doing both.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have certain, let's say even going back to the Ernst Fuchs, and I said in part, this isn't exactly right, but you could call him kind of a surreal realist.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at some of that, and it evokes a dream state for people. And certain Salvador Dali and the surrealists intentionally tried to evoke dream states. They felt that they were the door to the not only the sort of subconscious, but maybe even the superconscious. But in any event, they intentionally tried to evoke that. And because everybody has a dream state, it's one of the five major great states that are ever present,
mm-hmm.
according to most of the traditions, waking, dreaming, deep, formless sleep, pure witnessing, and non-dual, big mind. You can do art that evokes those states, and often those states are peak experiences, aha experiences. So if you're doing, let's say, go back to that turquoise structure, that only 0.5% of the population is going to get that structural part. But if you add a state part that gives them a glimmer of whatever you wish, subtle or causal or non-dual, then clearly it's going to be artwork that's going to speak to more people.
I see.
Now, it doesn't have to do that, but I think there's a place for art to do that. And sometimes what visionary art does is it's state art. It evokes states mostly.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. It evokes kind of dream states and high, subtle states where that people can see that. It's sort of Lord of the Rings on a with a transpersonal kind of twinge to it. And I think that's fine. It moves people. It's fantastic. In some cases, it's called fantastic art. But I think there's a whole lot of room, and I think, frankly, this is what some of your stuff does, is that it's not so much state art as structure art.
Mm-hmm.
structures of consciousness. And I think that there's turquoise and indigo informed intentionality, whether it's intentional intentionality or not. I think it's my eye sees it there on occasion. And I think that's really important. It also is going to get you a lot of blank stares on occasion.
I've noticed that, yes.
Whereas somebody doing fantastic art, people might go, well, it's not my cup of tea, but they never have trouble having a response to it.
Right. Yeah.
They know exactly what it is all about. It's dream time. But the hard part has always been to do structure art. And let me just finish that gestalt by saying, if you think of the four quadrants and the right-hand quadrants, which are the exteriors of things, of individuals and groups, those can all be seen. Most of them have simple location.
Right.
None of the left-hand quadrants can be seen with the five senses. Lower left quadrant, for example, consists of things like mutual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some mutual understanding right now. We're exchanging signifiers, and mm-hmm. signifiers are coming up in our mind, and they're similar enough that we say, yeah, I get what you mean. I understand. Paint mutual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put your finger on it, and that makes it hard because you have to choose right-hand quadrant objects to represent or evoke left-hand quadrant occasions.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's what you're doing. That's why it's hard. To give a quick reference to, let's say, Alex Gray's work, most of what Alex does, not all of it, is, in a sense, subtle and causal level realism. In other words, if there really are these subtle level currents, like acupuncture meridians and kundalini and so on, which I believe there is, he's painting them, in a sense, as your third eye would see them.
Yeah.
And those really exist in the upper right quadrant. The gross, subtle, and causal energy, according to the traditions, actually is something that
I sort of felt that it's not a coincidence that he used to do anatomical drawings.
I think that's exactly right.
He just went from the gross, subtle, causal, and just still doing anatomical drawings of the different bodies.
That's exactly right. And then he, again, does some other stuff, but that's a large part of what he's known for. Let's put it that way. I'm not saying it's easier. I am saying it's upper right and it's realism.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to take stuff, and Alex does this on occasion as well, you have to take stuff from the upper left and the lower left and then use stuff from the upper right to represent it. Now, that is a bitch. And unless you're doing something like literary art, and then you can write about mutual understanding, let's say, or you can write about non-duality, you can write about love, or you can write about values and so on. But to depict them, to do them in sculpture,
mm-hmm.
that's another world. And that's extremely accomplished and difficult artwork. Again, not to say that other fantastic art isn't, but it's
right.
very realistic in a certain sense. And this is, you don't have that luxury.
Well, I mean, that was intentionally I tried to avoid that category of fantastic.
Understood.
I think it's easy to dismiss the image precisely for what you said. Oh, that's dream time.
Yeah.
You know, that's not real. It's not.
Or a drug time.
Yeah, it's not significant. Yeah. It's not important. It's just,
right.
you know, someone wants to escape.
Right.
And I don't want that to the response. I want them
right.
to look at it and say, well, this isn't what I see in the world outside, but it is something about what I feel about what I see about the
right.
world outside.
Exactly.
And as you said, it's like, well, how do you depict that?
Right.
It's a very curious endeavor.
Now, at the second component we were talking about, that's the first difficulty, is that it truly is a non-pictorial depiction. And so that right there becomes hard. It's not a sensori-motor occasion. It's the interiors of sensori-motor occasions. And then the second is, if the artist is at teal or turquoise or indigo or violet or ultraviolet, he or she can't help but paint from that level. And so if you are at a higher than average structure stage of development, if you're at teal altitude, at turquoise altitude, or at indigo altitude, then you are dealing with a 0.5% difficulty. So you have two difficulties in doing transpersonal, just use that word meaning altitude, transpersonal or integral, pictorial or sculptural art.
Mm-hmm.
And you've run up against both of those difficulties, I'm sure. I'm just sort of giving...
No, absolutely.
And does this make sense to you, the sort of just the
Yeah, it does, but at the same time, I try to make sure that the image at least has enough well enough rendered so that even if no one picks up on any of those levels of the depths of the intentionality, that there's still something about it that
I agree
is satisfying enough to where they could say, okay, you know, I can, you know, that's,
I agree.
That's something they could live with.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's...
So, I mean, that's another third layer that I'm trying to put in there.
That's right, but that's not disagreeing with the explanation. That's saying...
No, not at all.
Yeah. And one of the things that I do like about the art is that it can be read on those many different levels.
Right.
And, of course, then you can say, well, the artist has either consciously or not consciously, has nonetheless had to use images that are often sensory motor.
Mm-hmm.
That's rather the point of a sculpture. It's rather hard to have a sculptor. Here's a sculpture of mutual understanding. It has no clay, no metal, no nothing. It's just, well, where is it? Well, I'm pointing to it right there. And it's in someplace in that airy space over there.
Right.
So people are going to get something sensory motor out of it.
Right.
But if you're also intentionally, as you say, you know, crafting something that somebody can pick up who's really, magenta or red, for that matter. They,
right.
They can see the stuff. There's a sensuousness about a whole lot of what you do.
Right.
It speaks to those levels if you just read it on those levels. And it's one of the things I like about it.
Yeah, well, I think in many ways that's a way to sort of bypass a lot of those, or actually not even bypass, it's sort of a way to invite people into engaging with the piece, you know, because suddenly... they're not even conscious that they are drawn to it for those reasons, but they are intrigued immediately, and then they have to start reconciling what's happening within the image. That leads them to a whole different place.
I think so. Well, it's no secret that a lot of your artwork is really, really sensuous naked bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, they're interwoven not just on a sensory motor level.
Right.
It's not just high-class porn.
Right.
There's stuff going on around it. And this is what I find so intriguing. It's also second tier,
mm-hmm.
structurally.
I think David Data would be interested in seeing some of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Analyze how does that bypass our sort of, you know, sensual sort of prototypes that we've approached and then suddenly say, wow. You know,
yeah,
I'm now engaged in something I didn't even realize.
I think so. Of course, he wouldn't understand any of the really higher meanings. He's such a gutter type. I just can't tell you.
Okay.
No, he would love it. He would absolutely love it. And here's a chance to make a quick point on that. You know, David just sort of conveniently talks about often three levels of sexual development,
mm-hmm.
which are, in a sense, first tier, second tier, third tier is one way to look at it,
mm-hmm.
an extended way of pre-conventional, conventional, post-conventional. And he and I think anybody that has eyes to see it, could find first-tier sexuality, second-tier sexuality, and non-dual third-tier,
right.
if you will, sexuality
yeah.
in what you're doing.
Right.
And that's what I think is interesting. Because
that's the intentionality, yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully that's what a sensitive viewer of turquoise or higher would pick out of it. But also then somebody that was at orange would also get an eyeful and find it very interesting.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's the challenge
mm-hmm.
of integral art in today's world, is how do you craft a message that a large number of people will be able to enjoy, but there's also something in there for 0.5% of the population.
Right. I think you addressed something, the real pivotal issue isn't that you can't really transform people, you can't really convince people to go someplace they're not ready to.
Right.
You just have to provide more depth.
Yeah.
And that when they're ready, then they start... you know, like an onion, start peeling away the layers and finding more and more materials to deal with.
I think that's exactly right, and I think that being in the presence of really terrific art also evokes a lot of other currents and consciousness. And I know myself, I mean, I was just sort of thinking about it as we were doing this, but I know several of my own favorite writings have been done for either forwards to books by artists or for mm-hmm. artists' showings.
Mm-hmm.
So Anselm Kiefer is one of my favorite artists and probably, you know, arguably the greatest artist of his generation, certainly German.
Yeah.
And I did To See a World. He asked me to do something for one of his showings, and I did something called To See a World. It's in One Taste, and I love that piece. Andrew Wyeth, if you can believe it, they discovered several previously unknown Wyeths, and the family and the curators asked me to do a introduction for the book where they were showing these, and that's
extraordinary.
Yeah, it actually is. I was very touched by Anselm Kiefer.
Does he know about your work, or why did they?
I really don't know who. I don't know if it was Jamie. I don't know if it was the curator. But believe me, the family okayed it, because obviously, I mean, the official book that came out about the showing had this. And it actually turned out to be probably, if I had to pick one, I think it's one of the best written things I've done. And that's the thing that I eventually put as chapter 4 and 5 in the Eye of Spirit.
Okay.
And that's a thing that I recommended you have a quick look at.
Right, yeah.
The sort of holonic nature of art. Yeah, that actually showed up in that book. And then I did 2 forewords for Philip Jacobson, Rubinoff Jacobson stuff, including Eyes of the Soul, which I think does a really fine job of explaining one quick overview of what integral art could be thought of in terms of structures and states. Uh-huh. And then obviously, you know, several forewords for my friend Alex Gray's work. Uh-huh. So I think it just calls forth the best in you when you're attempting to match some really great art. And it certainly has for me, I mean, in terms of my own life.
Do you think for you it gives you certain signifiers that plug in more acutely to your sort of mapping or your sort of vision? I mean, having something to play off of rather than simply trying to describe something sort of schematically?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it's in part that. I think it's in part also just not wanting to disappoint.
Someone else, yeah.
Yeah, it's something as mundane as that. But it's also just, I think it just reminds you that art is, you know, if you think of the 3 great disciplines that humans are involved in, they often shake down into 3. You can think of dozens, but the dozens shake down into art, morals, and science, or the good, the true, and the beautiful.
Right.
I, we, and it. And art is a calling to the very best in your own eye.
Right.
And I think it does. You just sit down when you're looking at great art, and you go, you know, I want to rise to that occasion as well. I want to make sure that I'm producing my own soul's great art, if you will. I want to make sure that I'm doing that. And I like to think I do that a lot, but I just noticed that it certainly called that forth in me, because so much of
you just look at the great epochs in history, and they are always sort of their landmark art movements at the same time. You can almost track leaps of consciousness within a civilization with great art movements.
I think so. And it's back and forth. I know that there are a lot of artists do some of their great work by reading philosophers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I mean, you've influenced my work a lot. I mean,
no, I appreciate that.
All of this starts working into the grist for the mill. I mean, and it comes out in ways that you think, oh my word.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that was occupying my awareness that much.
Yeah, it was a little ironic with Andrew Wyeth. The book was called Andrew Wyeth, America's Painter. And then to have this really, I hate the word, but the subversive art and literary theory in the front of it was wonderful.
You are listening to www.integralnaked.org.